You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com.
Thanks for tuning into the Southern Way Podcast on the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mark Haslam, and on this show, we cover all things hunting culture across the South. Tips, tactics, and skills to better your pursuit. And of course, we'll do things the Southern way. All right, welcome back to the Southern Way Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Haslam, and this week we're going to shift gears a little bit. So far, after taking over this podcast, I have had some various guests on. We've covered upland hunting, quail and woodcock, waterfowl hunting. We've had some turkey episodes, talk about trapping, conservation issues, and of course, deer hunting success stories. So I'm going to change things up, and I don't want this to be the same type podcast every single week. And I wanted to cover land consultants, kind of the ins and outs of that industry, breaking down that industry and what it involves, what you should expect, and what you should know if you're even thinking about placing a call to someone. Because a lot of the stuff they're not going to tell you. So let's just, you know, jump right into this. And, you know, I wanted to cover this not because I do consulting on the side, which this is not going to be a fluff piece for me. It's not going to be commercial for me. I do consulting, but I get a lot of inquiries from people that it's just not going to, it doesn't come to fruition, maybe based on their goals, maybe based on my background and what I know and what I'm comfortable doing, or maybe just, you know, simply based on where it's not a good fit. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong, is they make decisions because they want to hire somebody for whatever reason, but they're not making the best decision. So that's why I wanted to have this podcast, kind of talk about it. You know, consulting has really blown up over the past 5 to 6 years. Without question, it's from social media. Social media has absolutely blown this up. We have a ton of people doing it now, and it's no surprise. I mean, there's all kinds of people on social media doing all kinds of things because we have these free platforms at our fingertips. We can video, we can post, we can write, and that's all marketing. But the one thing you got to keep in mind is that to be a land consultant, to call yourself that, it's a very, very, very low barrier of entry. It's even lower than real estate. You don't have to have a certification. You don't have to have a license. You just call yourself a land consultant. Now, someone's going to probably ask your background. If they can't see it on social media, they might ask your background, but there's no governing body over this. There's no commission. There's nothing like that. It's not even like real estate. So this is why I wanted to cover this, because it's, you know, kind of Wild West. You need to do your homework. And a lot of times people look at someone's social media account, or they look them up online, and that's their interview process for a consultant. And that's not really probably the best way. That's probably not the best way of doing things. So let's just jump right into this. You know, there's a lot of different consultants out there, and, you know, you've got some guys and girls that do it nationally, and they'll go all over this country and they'll talk about how many states they go to. You know, they'll go all the way from the Northeast right now that's battling snow. I mean, I couldn't imagine that. I mean, it's 74 degrees right now in Georgia. I couldn't imagine dealing with snow right now at the end of March. And you know, You've got a consulting outfit. They'll go to the Northeast. They'll go to the Midwest. They'll go out in kind of some like Western states, Kansas, kind of pushing out there, Oklahoma. Then they'll come down the deep South. They'll come out, I should say the Southeast. A lot of times the South gets, lumped in and it's kind of one general region, the South. But you know what? There's a lot of different regions within the Southeast. To me personally, I cannot wrap my head around how one person can be that advanced in their knowledge and experience with land management and wildlife management to cover across the country. I can't wrap my head around it. You're going to have the knowledge of the species, but let's just take deer, for instance. The deer herd and the deer density and how deer use the landscape and how you hunt them and the seasons and the tactics and all of that are grossly different from all these regions I just talked about. Significantly different. Food plots, everything across the board is completely different. So right off the bat, doing it nationally, for the life of me, I can't wrap my head around. You might have the knowledge of these different regions, but I doubt someone's going to have the experience of working the land themselves firsthand on all these different regions. Because, a lot of times, this happens quite often, and you'll see it on social media if you follow consultants. They'll be paid to go into someone's farm, whatever state it might be. Let's say it's Oklahoma. Let's say it's Minnesota. Let's say it's New York or Vermont or North Carolina or Florida or Texas or Tennessee, and they'll come in to consult. They'll do their thing, and then that following spring, maybe that client shoots a big-ass gobbler, or maybe that following fall, that client shoots just a big-ass county record buck, and they'll claim success to that, their consultant. And, it's like, how much of that really falls on the consultant? But if they're not, like I was saying, if they're not doing the work and seeing things play out, here's one example. I'll give you one example right here. Hinge cutting. Hinge cutting was all the rage in deer management starting in probably the early 2000s. I don't know where it started from. But, hinge cuts has its place. It has a place. It doesn't have much of a place in the South, I can tell you that. Yes, there are certain situations in the South. Maybe you do. Maybe, you've got a hunting club lease and no one's cutting trees or you can't cut trees and there's not much thick and dense area. Maybe you can take some of those poor, just horrible sweet gum trees that no one likes, not much benefit to them. Maybe you can find a cluster of those and try to fall them down on top of each other, do a little bedding thicket that way, some hinge cuts. That can make sense. But that's a very highly specific type of situation South where hinge cuts make sense. Up North, it works for them, apparently. I mean, I say that because I don't know. Yes, I do consulting, but I'm not going to go north of probably somewhere in North Georgia pushing into Tennessee, somewhere northern on the north side, upstate of South Carolina. I'm not going to go above that latitude line because I don't know that type of terrain and how deer utilize that terrain. You see where I'm going with this? So hinge cutting apparently has this place up north. People talk about it. And then people will come down south and consult and preach it as if you need to, without question, set up hinge cut sites on your farm. And I'm not saying that deer won't use it. They might. But do you really need it? Because quite frankly, hinge cut sites can be very just aesthetically ugly. And they can cause some problems down the road just by simply getting in the way where maybe There's a better way. Maybe you are lacking bedding. Maybe you shouldn't hinge cut. Maybe you should do some forestry work. And when you're doing the forestry work to cut some trees and make some money, you can cut out that little section of gum trees I was just talking about, get rid of it, spray that area to make sure those gum trees are dead and they don't sprout back. And then you let it grow up wild for a couple of years. And then you reset it. And then you've got a natural bedding thicket that has some early successional food options. That's a lot different. And that's a better setup, for instance. So that kind of concludes the national level. Like I said, for the life of me, I just cannot wrap my head around how people travel the country consulting the, you know, every state, every region. To me, there's no way. I mean, that would be like you hire a real estate agent and, you know, you're going to take one real estate agent that works in Tennessee and you're going to bring him up to New Jersey to sell a property. He or she doesn't know that market. You're not going to do that. Why would you bring a consultant from Tennessee to work in New Jersey? It doesn't really make sense, at least for me. Regionally, you know, there's a lot of people that just stick to regions. I kind of fall into that. I'm going to go to a couple different states in the South. That's about it. Some will stay, you know, state level. Some will even stay within an hour or two of where they live. That's good for them. And quite frankly, me personally, I value those consultants a lot better because they're making decisions on what's best for their business and what's best for their potential clients. Because if you're putting yourself within an hour or two of your drive time or flight or whatever it is, you're staying grounded and you're not overextending yourself and you're not trying to just take every person you can get, meaning there's a little extra quality that's going in as far as consulting. You know, we see a lot of people, they get hired simply based on who they are, name recognition. Maybe they have a podcast, maybe they have a website, maybe they're a famous, you know, they have a TV show. They have some kind of celebrity type status in the outdoor space. That happens a lot. And I'm not saying those folks, they don't know anything, but do you really just, you got to do your background check on these people and talk with them as far as goals. I didn't mean like a real background check, make sure, you know, they're not having warrants out for them or if they're, you know, squatting in someone's house right now. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about having an interview, having an interview process to make sure that your goals are going to be met and that they can properly consult on your given land limit wherever it is. And we'll, you know, that kind of goes into what I would suggest is that if you have some people in mind that you want to talk to, have an interview. Pick up the phone. You're going to send them a message. You'll send a message on social media or an email. And at a certain point, you should have a phone call before you officially hire them. It's going to be an interview for you. They might not know that, but you need to talk to them. You need to gauge how committed they are to your particular goals. Do they have the experience you're looking for? You know, if you have a lot of forestry work that needs to be done, if you want to have forestry plans set up, if you need to be cutting trees and selling trees to make your farm or property viable, then you need to make sure that your consultant deals with that. Not that they're just simply going to say, call a forester. You need to make sure that they have a background in timber sales. And in the next part of the interview is I would have some direct questions. I'd have some direct questions for them as far as just like what I said about the forestry, their timber knowledge, the working timber knowledge, because if they're just going to push you off on a forester and say, oh, well, I can give you some forestry, some forester recommendations, that's great, but they've got to have a working knowledge. And if they don't have a working knowledge about how the timber industry works, about, you know, being able to have a timber program to help pay the bills, the taxes, insurance, care, and costs, you're probably going to run into a snag. Other parts of the interview, you need to have direct conversations about their species of focus. And this one's big. For me, this one's very, very, very big. You need to have, talk about what species they focus on. Most people, of course, they're going to know about deer. Deer is the number one hunted game species in North America, far more than any other big game or small game in this country. In fact, I mean, if you were to combine all the other hunters, the elk hunters, mule deer, turkey, quite all those combined, it's still not more than the deer hunters, the white-tailed deer hunters in this country. So you're going to have most consultants, yes, they're going to deal with whitetails. You're going to get that for sure. Turkeys. They're all going to want to deal with turkeys, I can promise you that, but they all might not have a working knowledge and experience on turkeys. Why? Because turkeys, here's some examples. If you got a property that has some very low numbers, let's say that you're in a region, a part of your state that has very sporadic turkey sightings, and you're trying to build up a huntable population, do they have experience in doing that? Because if they don't, but they have experience with, just simply managing robust populations, you might not get those results. Because building populations from scratch, almost, building huntable populations from dismal numbers of turkeys and quail is an uphill battle, and it is much different. It's very, very, very much different than maintaining that robust population. Quail, just mentioned that, just like turkeys. Well, you know what? Actually, it's not. I shouldn't say that. Quail is a lot different. I wrote an article about wild quail a couple months ago, really kind of highlighting the stark difference between wild quail and pen raised quail, and how a lot of people don't really even care about wild quail anymore because they don't care because they're not doing anything. But if you want quail on your property, if you want wild quail, you need to have those conversations with that consultant. Do they have experience with wild quail? Because if they don't, then you very well might struggle getting those results. Pen-raised quail, I'm not going to say pen-raised quail doesn't matter, but I guess from my perspective, it is impossible. There has not been one occurrence in this country where someone has built a population built a wild population from pen-raised quail. It doesn't happen. They might live a little bit. They might have some survival, but they're not going to survive. You're going to have to continue to pump in pen-raised quail. So if you're constantly doing that and releasing more birds, whatever that process might be for you, or what are you really doing? At a certain point, it's going to become a money pit. And there's nothing wrong with that if that's what you want, but you've got to realize that. And so my point is that there's a stark difference between wild quail and pen-raised quail management. Very, very stark difference. And pen-raised quail is perfectly fine, but you need to understand what you've got going. And lastly, I'll say about that, if you have any bit of wild quail on your property or in your localized neighborhood, on your neighbor's track, even the kind of county, kind of close by you, you definitely need to talk about someone that manages wild quail, because if you introduce pen-raised quail around wild populations, you can have problems, bad problems. And the pen-raised, the farm-raised can be detrimental to your wild coveys. Over time, they will breed, but over time, those bad genetics and those inferior genetics, those farm domesticated genetics, will pass on to those wild birds and make them susceptible, easy for me to say, susceptible to disease and death, and they just can't survive. Meaning you don't want introduced pen raised to wild quail, okay? And some consultants might not have experience with that. They don't have experience with that. Maybe they can read about it, but you don't want to have a consultant that has their knowledge just for simply reading off Google the same stuff you and I can do. Education experience. This is where a lot of consultants are going to separate themselves. They're going to try to separate themselves from the pack. Education, I'm not going to knock that at all. I mean, you know, you've got some biologists out there that have been formally trained. They've got a PhD and they've got this degree, wildlife degree, and that wildlife degree. You might have someone that, you know, a biologist that has been busting it at a university or a private operation for a couple decades, and they're moonlighting as a consultant. They're definitely going to know some stuff. You're going to have some folks that come right out of school, right out of college without wildlife degree, maybe wanting to try to do it. Are they going to know some things? Yeah, sure they will. But what kind of experience do you have? And this is what I'm going back to, experience. You know, it's like, you know, I'll go back to that real estate analogy. If you're looking to, let's say you've got an investment, and this is not an investment that you're putting $5,000 into. You know, some investments could be, you might give your buddy $5,000 to play in the stock market. You might give someone $10,000 to invest in their little entrepreneurship. This type of land, when we're talking about land investments, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, right now, at least in my local region, because I can speak about this, price per acre. I mean, we're seeing before this current real estate market pre-COVID, we were seeing land prices. Of course, it very much depends on your proximity to major cities, of course, different neighborhoods where the land is, soil, and different things. But you would see anywhere from $1,500 to $1,700 an acre to $5,000 or $6,000 an acre. Now that, I mean, things have just shot up. So my point is that you're dealing with a very high dollar investment that you have put a lot of money and time into acquiring this property. Okay. Do you want to hire someone that has the education but not the experience, or hire someone that has the experience doing it firsthand? That's up to you, but you need to ask those questions. Let's move now to, you know, who can benefit from consulting? Who can benefit from this? Because a lot of people, they want a consultant. You know, they want to make things better. They had the bucks, they had the deer herd, but they want the turkeys or the quail. Okay. And you know what? That reminds me, I know I'm jumping around, but when it goes back to the species of focus, duck and waterfowl, if you're looking for, you know, if you have a duck or waterfowl property, you need to talk with someone that probably has a very strong background in waterfowl. If someone called me and wanted me to go to their property, and if they had a duck property, I'll talk to them, but I can't accept that job. Listen, I mean, I could get away with some things, but that's not my bread and butter. That's not what I know. And so duck would be another different species of focus that you need to ask about if that's what you're looking to do. But who can benefit from consulting? You know, talking about people in the South, I would say that if you can't manipulate your land, consulting is not for you, and you're going to be wasting your time and money. I get a lot of inquiries from people that have leases. They're in a hunting club, and they're trying to break that glass ceiling barrier, and they're trying to take the property to that next level. If you're in a hunt club, I'm sorry, but there's only so much you can do that's dictated from your specific lease. You probably can't cut trees, probably can't kill anything, probably can't do any TSI, burn, or disc. You can probably just plant. So if you're looking for consultation, you need to be able to manipulate the land. You need to be able to cut trees. You need to want to cut trees. If you don't want to cut trees, then you're probably going to be wasting your time with a consultant, because so much of bettering wildlife across the board, whether it's deer, turkeys, quail, it's sunlight. You got to have sunlight. And there are so many properties out there that, I mean, quite frankly, if you just implemented a working forestry program, start making some cuts, and you did nothing else, if you just did some forestry work and nothing else, you're going to absolutely improve the hunting and the wildlife options across the board. So let's talk about, you know, those are reasons why maybe you wouldn't call a consultant. What are some reasons why you would? What are some benefits to working with a consultant? Because so far I've been trying to, you know, give a background as far as what you should be asking, what you should be thinking, how you should be sizing up different options, who's a good fit, who won't be a good fit. What are some reasons to get consultation? Well, like I mentioned before, your farm, your land, it's a real estate investment. And if you're not looking at, if you don't have those lenses on, you're making a mistake. Real estate across the board, whether it's your personal residence where you live, or it's your second home on the beach, or your Airbnb downtown, or your farm out in the woods, those are some of the biggest investments that you're ever going to make as far as capital, capital cost. So what I mean is, what I'm about to run through is value add. What's going to add value to your investment? Because if you hire a consultant and they come and go and they give you a management plan, and if you work out those said items on their management plan, if it does not add value to the property over time, of course, it's not going to be night and day. It's not going to take 6 months. But over time, if you implement those items, those suggestions they gave you, if it's not going to increase the value of your property, not talking about how you're taxed and your insurance on your property, what you're paying out there. I'm talking about if you were to sell it, put in the open market, you know, what would be, are these changes, are these suggestions going to make your property more desirable for the next buyer? I'm not saying that you want to definitely do these things to flip your property, but if you're not doing these things, if they're not adding value to your land and the habitat and the wildlife, you might rethink, you might question what these suggestions are. Because though you might not ever want to sell your farm, you've always got to have, you should always have an end game in mind. What's the end game for this farm? Okay. You go out, you buy a tract of land. Maybe you inherit a tract of land. It's 100 acres, it's 1,000 acres, it's 300 acres, it's 200 acres, it's 5,000 acres, whatever it is. You should absolutely have an end game in mind. What's going to happen to you? You know, you're 30 years old, you're 40, you're 50, you're 70. You need to have a plan in place. Are you going to leave it to your family? Are you going to leave it to your kids? If so, and, you know, and you're hoping maybe someone left it to you, maybe it's a property in your family, that's even more reason to come up with a working plan so that that next generation can maintain the farm. They can pay for the farm and they can keep it going. Or you might not know. You might not really have, you might not have any kids. You might not want to leave it to your kids. Maybe you don't like them. Maybe they don't like to hunt or be outside. That's, you know, fine, I guess. But if that's the case, you need to focus on your investment, because because one day you might see an opportunity pop up of another track. Maybe you've moved, or maybe you want to upgrade to a different farm. What have you been doing on your current one? Have you been, you know, meeting these goals and making these capital improvements to increase your value, increasing the value of the land? Because going back to interviewing consultants, what are they going to do? And this is something you should ask them. How are they going to increase the value of your land? I'm not saying they're going to be doing the work, but they should absolutely be able to answer that question. And if they answer the question off what I'm about to tell you, then you know they've just listened to this podcast. But, you know, I say all that because real estate in the hunting world has blown up just like consultants. There are many, many real estate brokerages that hyper-focus on deer. They hyper-focus on, you know, hunting, and, you know, they'll even bring in hunting species as part of their logo and part of their gimmick and everything. I'm not knocking those things, but a lot of those, some of those real estate agents, they don't know anything about land. They don't know anything about wildlife. But what they do know is their seller gave them some trail cam photos of some big bucks. I mean, how many times have you seen a property for sale and they're going to have trail cam photos of the big bucks? You know, this is it. You know, this is, look at these bucks that have grown this property. It's like, well, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Maybe that trail camera was taken, maybe that photo was taken right on the edge of the property, and that buck was just on the edge of his core area. I mean, some of that stuff, of course, you can't measure, but here are some value adds that you need to do on your property if you're looking to increase the value. Number one is running a QDM program. If you follow any of my content, especially with Southeast Whitetail, you know that I'm a big proponent of quality deer management. And it's my personal opinion that as long as we as humans interact and are with whitetail deer, management will always be needed. There will always need to be management of deer. If your consultant that you're looking to hire does not have experience in dealing with fawn recruitment, you should probably find someone else. The buck to doe ratio, antler expression, density, herd density, trying to figure out what your density is, where you should be. Do you have too many deer, too little, and working through that? Because all of those things, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, QDM is just this and that. But if you want turkeys and quail, you absolutely have to balance your herd. If you have an unbalanced herd, it is going to directly impact your quail and turkey populations. Income through timber sales. This is something big. You know, I talk to a lot of people that they don't want to cut any trees. They like that natural look, and they don't want to disrupt it. And that's fine. And a lot of times that's where I kind of draw the line and I figure out, well, this is not going to be a good setup for me or for that person, so I'm not going to take this job. I'm not going to accept their invitation to consult their property if they're probably not willing to cut trees. Why? It's because so many times of these virgin woods that people like to think they are is really horrible for wildlife. Absolutely horrible. If you're not willing to cut trees, you probably don't need to be contacting a consultant. But when you're talking with one, like I mentioned before, you need to, you know, have a discussion as far as if they have what their knowledge is as far as timber sales, the timber industry. What do they know about the current or the existing mills, the existing lumber mills that are local to your property? And this all, you know, a lot of this ties back to what I was talking about at the beginning of this episode as far as consultants that work at a national scale and a regional scale or a very small localized scale. The bigger you go on a national scale, do you think that you're going to have a working knowledge as far as lumber mills in Louisiana, what little trees they have there? I guess northern Louisiana or Mississippi, Alabama or Florida or South Carolina, North Carolina. It's going to be very hard to wrap your head around because prices will vary across the South. It's little things like that that can make a big difference? Or are they just going to simply dump you off on a forester or say, hey, you know what? That's a question for a forester. Here are some names. Because quite frankly, they shouldn't be doing that. Let me back up. They should be giving you some names of some preferred foresters that they know and can recommend, but they need to be able to talk about what you should be doing specifically in your property. Cutting this, thinning that, clear cutting this section, timing of all that, and timing with the current market. I mean, right now, pulpwood prices right now are pretty damn attractive based on where they were in South Carolina. They have gotten better. There was a period there where the pulpwood prices were down very, very, very low. In fact, before that, right there, the height of COVID, pulpwood prices were very high. They were shooting up, and there were people that were even clear cutting first thin sites to get that kind of money. So you need to have someone that has a working knowledge on that, or maybe talk with someone. Someone might even have, experience working with a direct buyer, because you don't have to go through a forester. A forester is essentially a general contractor, and they're going to be the middleman between the landowner who owns the trees and the timber buyer, who's going to go into contract with you, the seller, and they're going to agree to buy and cut these specific trees given a window. And then the forester is going to broker that deal and get a percentage. It could be typically it's 10% of that. So, if you go directly to a direct timber buyer, you're going to bypass a forester and you're going to ultimately save time and money. And, if you have a consultant, they can guide you along the way, it is absolutely fine. And I would equate it to, I go back to real estate a lot because that's my core. I mean, that's my long-term career is real estate, land and commercial investments. So a real estate analogy would be, you've got a seller, real estate, and a buyer. If those two, or if one of them doesn't, lack some experience and knowledge, they haven't done many transactions themselves, it's very, they would probably benefit from having a realtor. Of course, you always want to have your own realtor. It's amazing, just as a sidebar, it's amazing how many people they'll use one realtor, one agent for both sides of the deal, the buyer and seller, meaning you've got one person that's getting paid a commission that's going to know how high the buyer can pay and the lowest the seller can accept. That doesn't really make much sense. In fact, generally, one person is going to be a little bit screwed on that type of deal. But I'm not saying foresters are bad, but you can find someone that has experience and kind of guide you along the way. My personal experience with foresters that I've worked with is if you want to wait around years upon years, and if you want your trees to get backlogged, no pun intended, on cuts and need to work, hire a forester, because it's going to take you a long. Things are going to move a lot slower when you're dealing with forester. My personal experience with them is that a lot of them are just spread too far, too thin, and they probably can't, but that kind of goes back to having an interview, talk with them about your goals and what you want to accomplish. I've already mentioned this, but, build a legacy and a succession plan. This should be part of a consultant. And if it's not, that's fine, but you need to be thinking about an end game for your property. What do you want to do with it and where do you want to go with it? Because implementing this type of work can absolutely get you there. In fact, if you're looking at possibly, upgrading your farm, which a lot of people do. I mean, some people, they want to buy a tract of land and they want to build memories on it with their friends and family, and they want to keep it and probably pass it on to their kids. That's great. And that's what my family's doing. But some people, they absolutely upgrade or they flip properties. You know, they buy a raw piece of land. And I will add, there's absolutely a big market for this. You buy a raw piece of land. You implement these different practices and methods as far as forestry and food plots and game management, and you make it into something special, and then you sell it. Because it's just like land, hunting land, recreational land is just like any other type of real estate when you boil it down. You've got some people that want a fixer-upper. They want a blank canvas that they can build out how they want to. They can put the pond where they want it. They can put the cabin where they want it, the rifle range where they want it. They can, just like your house, you know, your wife might want to be able to design her own kitchen, her own bathroom, wallpaper, all that. Or on the other side of the spectrum, you've got folks that they want it done. Maybe that's not their MO. Maybe they don't really want to invest time in that. They don't want to hire a consultant. They want that turnkey property. And that's big, especially when you get around some of the, you know, the closer you get to major cities. In major cities, higher populations, and you're probably going to have a higher demographic of people that have wealth and are making a good bit of money that can afford these properties. A lot of times they want those turnkey properties. They want to be able to roll right in that next hunting season and start shooting big bucks and start shooting turkeys and ducks. So there's absolutely a market with that. You need to be thinking about what your legacy is or what your goals are for your property. And if you don't know what they are, you probably need to figure them out before you hire a consultant. If you don't have real goals in mind before you hire someone, you might be wasting your time. The last thing I'll mention is timing of work. You know, you can find a consultant off the street that's going to rattle off this and that, and they're going to know all these buzzwords, and they're going to know what to say, but are they going to know the timing of it? When to spray before you replant trees, when to burn to accomplish what your goals are. So, you know, I just wanted to focus on this this episode and just trying to give a background on this, because there's a lot of outstanding consultants out there, and there's some that are, you know, there's some that are a lot cheaper than others, and there's some that are going to be $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, $6,000 by the time you add in a written report. And if you're spending $3,000 to $5,000 to have someone come to your property for a day, a half day, or a day, or a day and a half, and then give you a written report, you really need to do your homework. I've talked to a lot of folks, you know, whether, you know, and I might not in mind, I might not even be talking to them about consulting myself, but I'm talking to them about their hunting property. I've heard a lot of folks that have hired a consultant, this person, that person, you know, this person that's well-known and this person that's not well-known across the board. And quite often were underwhelmed. They were kind of left like, yeah, got some good stuff, but it didn't really seem like they got their value or whatever else. And it might be not because they weren't sizing up and doing their homework and trying to find the best fit for them. And that's why I go back to the very beginning of this podcast, you know, talking about who are you looking to hire? Do you want to hire off experience, off education? Do you want to hire off of, you know, someone that's well-known, someone that's a hunting personality because you're maybe a fanboy and you want to have them on the property? That's great. But it may or may not yield certain results. And I would say you definitely want to focus on where they work. Not saying where they live, but where they have worked. Not consulted, but where they have actually planted food plots. Where have they actually taken a chainsaw out and seen the work mature over time? Because, for instance, for me, myself, I don't have a formal education. and wildlife management or land management. I don't. I didn't go to a wildlife university. I don't have a degree. I don't have a PhD or a doctorate. I didn't intern at this lab or this deer pen. I didn't do that. Myself, in the way I consult, is that I'm a lifelong QDM follower, disciple, if you will. QDMA is no more. They're National Deer Association, and they have shifted a little bit as far as, you know, what they do and what they focus on. But, you know, QDM, quality deer management, that's my background. And I've spent the last going on 19 years now managing my family farm, 1,900 acres. And I can show people. I can show people statistical results as far as what we've done. You know, what we've done that's worked and what we've done that hasn't worked, and how the property has seasoned over time and how things can play out over time, because there's a lot of things that might be a quick fix. Might be a quick fix of, you know, well, you know, hinge cut those trees and or do this and maybe you'll get some deer to stop. You know, hang a, like, here's one example. You know, people, huntability has become a buzzword in the industry. Huntability. Better your huntability, increase your huntability. What does that really mean? Well, I would say it means one way, increasing daylight activity and increasing daylight sightings of deer. One suggestion you might see is, well, put up a mock scrape, you know, put one of those, you know, create a mock scrape or put in one of those fake rubbing trees or plant a tree in the middle of your food plot to kind of rub on, or put one of those ropes, the scrape ropes, whatever I keep seeing on social media, because that's going to form a hub for deer and increased daylight movement. That's not going to do anything. I'm not saying deer aren't going to use it, but that doesn't improve your huntability. Huntability is something that you should be able to statistically break down and see results from year to year based on your hunter observational data and your harvest log, based on your overall density. So, you know, that's how I work. And I've thoroughly enjoyed helping out the people that I've talked to. And I just, you know, wanted to cover this because it's, you know, it's, I see a lot of consultants online. I see a lot of consultants on social media. And, you know, I'm not calling certain people out because I'm, you know, I just know what I know. That's a very stupid line to say, but it's truth. And that's what I led this podcast with. I know what I know. And this consultant over there just knows what he knows. And this consultant over here just knows what she knows. So I you know, you need to just, you know, think this through. And yeah, I guess where I was going with that last statement, I lost my train of thought, but I see a lot of things on social media that are just flat out, pardon my language, but just flat out fucking wrong. Just flat out wrong. Here's one example. I saw something on social media like a week or two ago about feeders and turkeys. And it was like, hey guys, here's a tip. If you're looking to increase your huntability, I'm not sure if they used the word huntability, but it was probably something like that. If you want to increase your huntability this turkey season, if you want to hold more turkeys on your property during turkey season, put feeders up and leave them going during turkey season. You know, if I have to explain, I didn't say anything to that. I'm, you know, I try not to leave any negative or snarky comments, but I mean, that is just, one, is probably not legal. But if it is, that is a horrible idea as far as your turkey population on so many different levels. The different toxins that can develop in the corn feeders, in that heat, can be absolutely detrimental to turkeys and poults. And then furthermore, do you really want to be concentrating your turkeys under a feeder? There's just so many things there's wrong with that. That's what I'm getting at. Is it you really need to kind of have those conversations with people and talk to them, you know, what have they done? You know, where have they worked? Do they have hands-on experience? Because I you know, doing podcast, I interview a lot of people, especially on my other podcast, Southeast Whitetail. I interview a lot of biologists and researchers and people that have that high level educational background, and of course they've got a lot of hands on experience. And then I'll talk to a lot of deer hunters that maybe they don't have that management experience, and because you know, everyone doesn't have that luxury. Some people don't own land or lease land. They get invited or they hunt public land, but they're really good. They're damn good deer hunters, and they know how to go in and assess a property to kill a buck. And then you've got people that I talk to in this podcast that have the work experience. You know, they've worked at plantations. They've, you know, worked for landowners. They work with their family, you know, owning land. To me, those are the kind of people that definitely get overlooked. But those are the folks that have seen things and they have gone through seasons. They've gone through seasons where it was underproducing for bucks. Maybe it was underproducing for turkeys, and they've been able to figure out why. You know, why was that? Why had the last 2 years been trending down for quality bucks harvested? Okay. Now, for instance, that one question. Let's say you've got lamb, and the past 2 years in this given scenario I've just laid out. Let's say the past 2 years, your quality buck harvest, you know, 4 or 5, 4 year minimum age and up has decreased. It's been decreased past 2 years. Okay. And you talk with a consultant or someone, you're going to get answers across the board, across the spectrum. You're going to hear people say, hey, you know, get some protein feeders, make your food plots bigger. Don't plant this, plant that, you know, lay off there's going to be a multitude of reasons. But when you talk with someone that has experience, that has dealt with that, they might say something that you've never thought about that someone that doesn't have the experience might not realize. And that might be, well, you know what? Maybe you just need to shift your stands around. Over time, deer can get used to the stands. Maybe your stands are in the middle of the fucking field and you need to shift it around. There's some pretty simple ways that you can manipulate the land for that better daylight movement. That's what I'm talking about is when you talk to someone with experience. Lastly, I win this podcast talking about don't fall victim to gimmicks. When it comes to consulting, there's a lot of gimmicks out there. People will talk about, you know, they'll design a property at, you know, design a property for, you know, here's a buck corridor and here's a buck bed. And, you know, we're going to lay out these food plots. Then we're going to lay out these staging areas and this travel corridor and this, to a certain degree, there's only so much you can direct traffic as far as wild game. Unless they have really laid eyes on your property and really know how the game move, some of that is just, to me, it's just a complete wash, especially in the deep South. And that's what I know. That's where I work. That's where I live. That's where I manage. And that's what I know is deep South. A lot of times with that, you got thickets. And you got destination food plots, and there's, I guess I'm talking long-winded here just to simply say sometimes people overthink designing a property or laying a property out. It's not rocket science, and you don't need to overthink it. You don't need multiple levels. You just need to, you know, get the goals from someone and try to meet those goals. So I hope this podcast shed a little bit of light on the land consulting business and what it really is. You know, there's some great ones out there, and there's some that you're probably going to leave thinking, why did I just spend X amount of dollars on this? And that can very well be the case. As far as pricing, you're going to see people that are going to price it anywhere from a couple hundred dollars trending towards $1,000 all the way up to, you know, $5,000, $6,000 by the time you have a site visit and a management plan. And to me, that's just that's a pretty staggering amount of money, especially if they give you a price without even knowing the size of your property. If they're going to tell you, hey, is this price, but your property's 50 acres or it's 5,000 acres, that should be a red flag there. So thanks for listening. We're going to have a guest on next week. So I will see y'all next Wednesday.